Hello and welcome to Inside the School District, a weekly discussion providing you with relevant news, recent developments, and must-have information about what's happening inside the Mat-Su School District, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
It's my great pleasure this morning to welcome into the studio, not one but two people, Amy Spargo, who's Assistant Superintendent of the Mat-Su Borough School District. Welcome, Amy.
Good morning.
And Michael Carson, who's the Opioid Task Force Coordinator. And obviously we have a topic dealing with how the school district and the task force are going to be working together, have been working together, dealing with opioids. Amy, let's start with you. The school district has recognized, I know, over a long period of time, the importance of dealing with what appears to be a certainly valley-wide, nationwide, worldwide issue associated with opioids. How about giving us a summary of where the school district stands in this whole project?
Well, the school district really is an institution of prevention. We are interested in, and you'll hear Michael talk about this, but we're very interested in going upstream. And what we mean by that is we need to keep kids out of some of the risks. And there's lots of risk behaviors that the school district is involved in supporting kids to stay away from. So things we've done recently, you've heard a lot about capturing kids' hearts and building relationships with kids. We've instituted a social and emotional learning continuum. We know that our little guys are coming in with greater needs. About 10 years ago, there were 3 behavior support programs in the district. We have 14 now in our elementary schools. And so little guys are coming in with needs, and we have to really work on teaching skills to help them be successful and self-regulate so that they do stay out of risky behaviors later on.
Okay. Michael, you've been involved with this this whole issue for a long time. You're now, there's an opioid task force. How did that come into being, and how does it relate later on? We'll talk about with the district.
Well, thank you, Mike, for having me this morning and this opportunity to share some vital information with our community. 2 years ago, had a couple walk into my house. I'm also the vice president of recovery specialist for my house, a homeless drop-in center in Wasilla, directed by Michelle Overstreet. This young couple were looking for detox. They were both heroin users, both under 26 years old. And unfortunately, we don't provide that service. And unfortunately, 2 years ago, there was actually more detox beds than there is currently, which is pathetic. So we were discussing some options, possibly some ambulatory detox, meaning at home, with maybe friends. But unfortunately, their entire family was drug users, all their friends. They didn't have any place to go. So the young man said, well, I've detoxed in jail before. I could probably do that again. And I said, the problem with that is you'd have to commit a crime. And he said, so be it. And he walked out of our cafe and picked up a patron's purse, walked out to the end of the street and waited for the police to come and pick him up. And he ended up detoxing in jail. I don't know how that turned out, but I can let you know that there are 1,500 individuals a year detoxing in behind the walls. So I wrote an article in the Frontiersman, and then we started getting some phone calls. We had a gentleman by the name of John Green who lost his daughter. She was a former student in the Mat-Su School District, and she died of heroin withdrawals in the Anchorage jail. So we pulled together a couple of community meetings, and those meetings were reeling meetings. They were like early meetings that we were having with homeless youth, and people were just groping, struggling, just on the ropes and rocks trying to find resources. People were sharing about children that had been through a number of treatment programs and relapsed and tears, and it was just gut-wrenching. And so after about two or three meetings, we ended up corralling and focusing that passion and energy into a task force. And we've been in existence the last 2 years, have gotten some great national traction from Senator Dan Sullivan and Alicia Murkowski, some connections with the state. Governor Walker has called in to a number of our task force meetings. So we are, as Amy said, now moving upstream and talking about prevention, because the bottom line, Mike, is that we need to stop making addicts.
Mm-hmm. So I think you have nicely illustrated the issue, and in part, the lack of treatment that's available. When you mentioned prevention, Amy, within the school district where you have access to 19,000 students, how does that work? What's the approach within the district?
So there's a two-pronged approach. Certainly we want to speak to, at an age-appropriate level, to students about the dangers of addiction and the brain science of addiction and the risks of opioids that often come to them in legitimate ways through prescriptions or sports injuries or those kinds of things. But the predominant way that we push out a prevention message is that we try to build positive assets in students. And we know that the more positive assets students have, the less likely they are going to be engaging in risky behaviors. And so we teach kids in every classroom how to ask for help, how to get along, how to work together and grow that age appropriately so that they're more equipped for those difficult situations. We have rolled out a curriculum, K-8, called Positive Action. And Positive Action really moves the locus of control from external, giving kids stickers and giving kids candy, to internal, where when students make a positive choice, we ask them, how does it make you feel when you work hard on a project? How does it make you feel when you help your friend? And they say, I feel good. And we say, yeah, when you do positive things, it helps you feel good. And begin to help kids build that whole sense of doing positive things helps them feel good. And that's its own reward.
Now, for both of you, I'm looking for some way that listeners can understand the issue in terms of how many people are affected at the present time. I can believe that people have followed all kinds of discussions about prescription drugs leading to dependency and what appears to be a crisis that has been addressed in national media and so on. But when we come down to it, take a period of time, I'm not, say 10 years. Over the past 10 years, how have things changed to bring this situation into broader focus? How many more people are involved, for example? What, Michael?
I can start with letting you know that our health costs have increased sixfold. Arrest rates have increased 140%. I can let you know in the last 5 years, heroin overdoses have exceeded prescription overdoses by 3 to 4 times. And when you ask how many people are affected, I can honestly say I believe every Alaskan has been affected by this opioid epidemic at some level. Some level they have been touched either with family members, experiencing personal crime. I get phone calls weekly. Got a phone call last week from a mother that's in Minnesota taking care of her mother, and her son's living in a gravel pit in the Butte, and he's shooting heroin, and she's afraid of the next phone call. Every time I step into any venue and people recognize me or they ask me what I'm doing, everyone says, oh, let me tell you my story. There are stories and stories and stories of people that have been affected this opioid epidemic.
Okay. Amy.
I think we see it on the two ends of the spectrum predominantly. We see little guys who are affected by absentee parents who are doing their best but are struggling with addiction and are unable to care for their students, their children in a way that doesn't result in students with greater needs. Often OCS is involved and attendance. We just had a big promotion about chronic attendance. The students that I've dealt with who have a parent struggling with addiction have a real hard time coming to school. They're kind of trying to hold things all together at home. If they're a little older, if they're younger, there's no one to get them up. So we see some of those things increasing. We also see more prescription drugs coming to school on the upper end. So there's more suspensions for things that we just didn't see before. There seems to be more prescription drugs in the older student population. Really, though, schools are very safe places, and schools are positive places. And more than anything, we just see kids coming to school with trauma and kids coming to school because it is a safe place and because it is a place where they can make positive adult connections. We have very caring teachers and principals who are, we've done a lot with trauma-sensitive schools where the district is partnering with community agencies all over. It's too big for any one person to address. So Matsu Health Foundation supported 15 schools being trained in being trauma sensitive. And that really just means being aware of what issues kids need, they bring to school, and how to make school a safe, consistent, stable place where a student can de-escalate and learn.
Okay. So I know that from time to time, the Alaska State Legislature has addressed this issue. A new session will be coming up in January. Is there specific legislation that either the task force or the school district or school districts are supporting that would be helpful in this whole issue?
Absolutely. I'll step back and talk about detox opportunities. Currently, we have, I believe, 20 beds in the entire state of Alaska with a population of 750,000 people. Treatment, and the problem with treatment, Mike, is not just access, it's immediate access. I called up a treatment center last week just for a test run. They had no beds available at that moment, and they had a 2-week waiting list. A suffering addict is not going to wait 2 weeks. By that time, they'd already be detoxed, so they're going to go out and shoot up. They don't want to be dope sick. So, and prevention, as Amy mentioned. The three main drivers of substance abuse: trauma, mental health, and poverty. What we need to do is, if we are truly, truly interested in stopping this epidemic, we have to start moving upstream. Mike, for every dollar you spend in prevention, you save $4 to $10 on the other end. We have a lot of other end cost, but you cannot put the cost on someone that has died because of the opiate epidemic. So we really, I think, have to move upstream and start dealing with these issues head on so that we can turn the tide. I don't think prevention is going to change the equation. It's going to subtract the number of addicts, and then we will have less affected families that are suffering from the shame and guilt, thinking that, you know, what did I not do right as a parent? What should I have done? These are no easy answers. It's multifaceted and multi-layered. And so just one thing that I think the public needs to understand, our community: in the next 10 years, the CDC has estimated that 650,000 people are going to overdose from opioids. Again, that's almost the entire population of the state of Alaska.
So the other focus I've noted recently has been on prescription drugs. Do you see at the present time changes that have occurred so that those people who have suffered trauma, who are perhaps using a prescription drug, are less likely to move on?
Could you amplify as far as what you mean by moving on?
And I realized when I said that, moving on to two different directions, moving on to using illicit drugs, or moving on because their use of the prescription drugs has solved a problem and they can return to a drug-free type of life?
Well, that's a very good question, and I will let you know the latest research out of the University of Arkansas Medical School said that a 10-day supply, after 10 days of a pain pill, you have a 1 in 5 chance of becoming a long-term user. A 30-day supply of Percocet, 50-50 chance. Now, when you run out of pain pills, it's easier than you think to transition to heroin. So there, I have to give a shout out to the governor for his opioid bill that has a component, an aspect that the initial supply from a primary physician is a 7-day supply. Now, there are waivers for chronic pain and some other issues. However, moving on, as you say, for individuals to move off of opioids and then not go to heroin, I believe what we need to do is talk to our federal legislators, have them convince insurance companies that they need to cover acupuncture, physical therapy, club membership. We as a nation need to find alternative therapies instead of opioids, because I don't think the public understands how powerful and addictive they can be and are for anyone.
Okay, Mike Malevsky, and I'm talking here with Amy Spargo, who's assistant superintendent with the Matsu Borough School District, and Michael Carson, who's chair of the opioid, or he's coordinator of the opioid task force. Amy, you were about to say something.
Well, I would be remiss if I didn't, when we talk about the legislature, talk about the value of preschools, and that preschools are the foundation of getting kids started in the right way. And students who need preschool the most are students coming from trauma and students coming from families where there's issues of addiction. So I hope that the legislature prioritizes preschools. I also know that we have statutes that relate to providing medical and dental services for homeless youth or students who are emancipated, or they're in transition, or they're their own family agency. We can provide mental and medical and dental, but there's not a statute that specifically speaks to mental health services in schools. And so we would like to see that addressed as well, so that we can bring mental health counseling. And we have some partnerships, but we'd like to really expand that in the district and make sure that there are mental health services where the kids are.
Okay. Michael, you gave an example, or as we began this show, talking about a situation where an individual would commit a crime in order to be incarcerated in order to get services. In a recent interview with Palmer Police Chief, I was reminded, as he described the situation, when an officer discovers someone using heroin, for example, this is not a crime. And as a result, unless a criminal act is complete, and I guess I knew that, but not really until that came up, to say, okay, so for example, in the school district, if you were to discover someone using heroin in the schools, what would be the action that would be taken?
So there's presumptive sanctions for having illegal substances. And so heroin is not a legal substance. And even marijuana and cigarettes aren't legal if you're under a certain age limit. So
Right. When
you have illegal substances or medicine that was not prescribed to you, and we have, so there's sanctions for that. And generally when someone is suspended from school for a drug offense, it's more of a long-term suspension. And so we have a program in partnership, again, with Juvenile Justice called PACE, and LeBron McPhail, who's an amazing guy for how he's reaching students. And he is working on not only getting kids caught up on their credits, but learning life skills so that when they're done with their suspension from school, they're not only behind academically, but they're ahead socially and emotionally. They've picked up some anger management skills. They've picked up a mentor for life, and they've picked up a lot of good drug and alcohol education from Juvenile Justice, who delivers curriculum in that program. You know, if you have illegal substances at school, we do call the police. It's not okay, and there's very severe consequences. So it is a little different than an adult in the streets.
Okay, Michael.
Yeah, I think you are referring to the crisis intervention concept that law enforcement is looking at across the state. I know that there's a major controversy now about SB 91, the criminal reform law. Unfortunately, I believe most people can agree that the cart was put before the horse in that we lack resources for the Palmer Police Department to take an individual.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So where do you take them?
Exactly.
The concept is taking the person to the right place at the right time for the right reason. We don't have that available. I want to give a shout out, however, to Dean Williams, the Commissioner of Corrections, who is now looking into, and I believe has a couple pilots with Vivitrol behind the walls. Vivitrol is a long-lasting naloxone. It's an injection, so it can't be diverted, and it curbs cravings the obsession to use. And trying to provide those people that are behind the walls, I don't want to refer to those people, but suffering addicts, if they are interested in getting out from underneath of it, and enough's enough, giving them that, those tools, as Amy mentioned, giving students tools to be able to deal with their particular addiction, and then be able to re-engage in our community, looking for some possibly new training, employment, so that they can be productive and successful. That's what we want for everyone. And especially, I think the common ground everybody can agree on. We might not agree on every strategy that the task force is looking at, harm reduction, say needle exchange. But everybody can agree on we want the best for our kids. We want our kids to be successful. We want them to be productive. We want them to be happy. We want them to have a purposeful life. We want that for everybody.
Sure.
And I want to plug another thing that we all can agree on. We can agree that people who are working in the school district are not there to get rich. They're there because they love kids. And that we have caring adults who have training, who are there and available for kids. And that is the best prevention ever, is to make sure that every kid can name an adult who they can talk to when something's bothering them, rather than turning to something that's much more risky.
She's spot on. They define addiction as isolation, and they define recovery as connection through relationships, living out in the open.
Mm-hmm.
And we really have to break down the stigma for those suffering addicts. They are truly living in the shadows. Amy and I were talking about this morning. If we would just step back and look at their self-destructive behavior, nobody would choose that. They are truly have been hacked and whacked and held hostage because of the science of addiction. I wanted to just talk about one more thing when Amy was talking about educating our students. There is an advanced directive in the opioid bill that as an individual may be in recovery or someone that is not interested in using opiates, I can tell my physician, I can tell the emergency room. And we need to teach and make students aware that they are their own personal best advocates and being able to take care of themselves and be smart consumers and know that these are highly addictive substances. And are there any alternatives? What are the consequences? What are the side effects? What are the withdrawal symptoms? And, you know, besides kids, many community members probably aren't aware of that and need to know that. So we know, Michael, 90% of all new heroin users started with pain pills, and 80% of them got them illegally.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground. I really appreciate both of you, Amy Spargo and Michael Carson, for coming in and talking about a topic that looks like we'll be coming back to talk about again. It's not going away immediately, but it sounds as if both the school district and the opioid task force have done some good work bringing attention to it, and more than just attention, but some very, very solid approaches that are helping individuals. Any last comments before we finish up?
Just thank you for having us on, and thank you for caring about schools and broadcasting this positive work that's happening out there in the schools. We really do care about our community, and we're excited to be a part of solutions.
Okay, thank you, Amy. Michael?
Yes, I want to give a shout-out to the Mat-Su School District. Really excited and encouraged with our partnership working together. That's how we solve this problem, is we develop partnerships across community. And bringing people together, having these difficult, sometimes messy conversations, and seeking the solutions. We know there's no silver bullet, but it's going to take everybody. And just want to give everybody a shout out that we have a community task force meeting October 3rd at 7 o'clock at Wasilla High School in the theater. It's a community family, student friendly, and Dr. Jay Butler, Chief Medical Officer, is going to talk about the science of addiction. So it'll be very informative. Everyone is welcome. Thank you, Mike.
Okay. All right. Have a good day.
You've been listening to Inside the School District, a weekly discussion providing you with information about what's happening in the Mat-Su schools, moderated by Mike Malevsky. This program is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, the station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.